Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the whole crew here, John Roering, Jacob Kanzler, Craig Monger, and Lauren Gibbons. A little later, we've got snippets from our interview with the governor that you're going to want to check out. We ask him specifically about Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, and when is it okay for Brian Kelly to kind of branch off and do his own thing? You'd be interested to hear what the governor has to say about that. But first, we've got our Best of edition, and this week we've got our Senators of the Year and our Freshmen of the Year. Well, Jacob, let's get your nominations here first for Senator of the Year.
All right, Kyle, I'm going to go with Senator Phil Pavlov.
Or the Senate Education Chair.
Yes. So I went with Senator Pavlov because if you think about what happened last year, the teacher evaluation bill was one of the biggest pieces of legislation that moved through. And it was an all-year process, as you remember. I don't think any other legislator had as much influence on what came out than Senator Pavlov. I mean, one of the major points where the legislation changed from a previous iteration to what got signed into law was kind of implementing more local choice. And that was something that Senator Pavlov really pushed for. And, you know, Kyle, I know you did a deep dive into this earlier this summer. And he seemed to have had a lot of fingerprints on what came out.
I would agree with that there, too. And I think he's also, and we were able to find this out through our most liberal, most conservative rankings, though, but he has been a very conservative voice in that caucus. The votes maybe didn't necessarily go the way that he wanted to. I think he represented a corner of that caucus that had a very significant presence in 2015.
You know, besides teacher evals and that, just, you know, again, he is chair of the Senate Education Committee. He stays pretty involved. He's doing a new series on not just focusing on the financial difficulties of schools, but the academic side. So I'd say he's stayed pretty engaged and pretty active.
All right. Thanks, Jacob. John, let me get your nominee now for Senator of the Year.
I'm going to go with probably some would say an easy pick, but Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff. I think in a lot of ways he's, we just witnessed this week with the ban on straight party voting. He really backed up one of his members' positions, got the bill done. Obviously, you know, we're not weighing in on either side of any issue here, but as far as effectiveness, he's actually able to manage egos in a diverse caucus and still get some things done on behalf of the entire state of Michigan. Got the, you know, big key part of getting the roads thing through as well. So,
well, I don't think you can underestimate that either, because that was not an easy lift to get done. If you take a look at it, the House's initial package was only $117 million of new revenue. He got the House from $117 million to $600 million, which is, I would say, a pretty significant get.
Yeah, that legislature, when you, on the whole, both majority caucuses are pretty conservative groups of people, and getting $600 million new revenue is not a small thing.
And for him to get $800 million out of his own Senate caucus, mm-hmm. just as kind of his contribution to starting negotiations, again, with that kind of caucus, when you got a supermajority of 27 members. And that was really the most significant thing, I think, was done all year, obviously, right? And so for him to be able to do that, I think is absolutely worth mentioning.
Yep, and he's kind of a quack. I kind of wondered what he was going to be like as majority leader when he came in, and I think he's really stepped into it.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's kind of grown in the position. I've really liked, too, also how he's been, I think, accessible to the media. Obviously, it's hard to beat Randy Richardville in that regard, because Randy Richardville's obviously got a very outgoing personality. But I've been very impressed with Arlen Meekhoff in that regard. He's been accessible, and he's very to the point, I would say, with his answers.
Yep, he was also voted most effective in the Senate, remember, by our poll we did with Epic MRI, the Insiders poll.
That's right. All right, Lauren, we got to get your nomination here for Senator of the Year as the Senate beat reporter for MERS.
Okay, well, I'm going to put forward a somewhat of a dark horse candidate. I don't think you necessarily expected this to come out of my mouth, but I wanted to nominate, at least put his name out there, Senator Robertson.
Senator Dave Robertson, he's never been nominated before. Why are you putting his name out there this year?
It's been pretty clear throughout this year that he has considerable sway in election policy in Michigan. I don't think that the Senate would have come out as strongly against no reason absentee as it did if Senator Robertson was not influencing that conversation. There were several key leadership that clearly wanted no reason absentee to be tie-barred to straight ticket, and Senator Robertson took a stand and made sure that that didn't happen. And there were some conversations that it was potentially going to get put off until next year, that this might be at an impasse. But, you know, Senator Robertson was a key part of that conversation to try and get it through this year, and the House ended up going along with what the Senate wanted here. Even though it was Senator Nolenberg's bill, it was pretty clear that Senator Robertson had some key influence.
He got what he wanted on that one,
that's for sure. He did get what he wanted. And he also had the first two public acts of the year to change the presidential primary elections. That was pretty significant. 638 is also a pretty significant change if that goes through. It got through the Senate. It's in the House side right now. But that could change the influence of super PACs in Michigan and what they're allowed to do. And he also has Senate Bill 110 on the table, which is also before the House right now, to switching the county executive election for Oakland County, which would be a pretty big change.
And we were expecting that during this last few session days of 2015. Didn't come up yet. But I wouldn't count that out.
All right, Craig, who's your nominee for Senator of the Year?
For Senator of the Year, I'm going to go with Jeff Hansen.
Jeff Hansen, okay.
Two things for Jeff Hansen stick out. He's kind of stuck his neck out on the line to work on this DPS legislation. There aren't a lot of people, as we can tell by the bills not being introduced, who are willing to attach their names to it. He attached his name to it. He's out there working it. He'll talk to people about it. He's not working behind the scenes and refusing to say anything about it. I mean, he'll talk to reporters about what's going on to a certain extent. He's also in charge of the school aid budget, and it was a school aid budget this past year. They got more yes votes than any other in recent memory, I believe.
And the school aid budget also turned out to be a little controversial here in the end, too, because there were some proposals that the House had put out there that ultimately didn't get into the final package, and it was Hansen who kind of negotiated that down.
Yeah, the Hansen kind of faced what a lot of new ideas from the House Republicans, I'll say, and kind of steered it into something that they could all agree upon.
This Detroit public schools issue, too, obviously the bills hadn't been introduced yet, and you didn't take off marks for that. It's more the idea that somebody has to be the face of that, and here's somebody in a competitive district. Well, obviously, he's not going to run again. He's going to be term limited after this term, but from a competitive district who's willing to take this on, is not from Detroit or Southeast Michigan, but still thought it was a worthwhile venture to take on.
Yeah, for sure, and I think maybe there are some marks that should be taken off for the bills not being introduced, but he's trying to build a consensus, and that might take some time here.
Well, I'm going to close out my nomination for Senator of the Year here with Senator Rick Jones. I think it's fair to say there isn't really a more active senator in the state legislature than Rick Jones. This is a guy who holds committee meetings seemingly every week and has a full agenda every time. And you may argue about what he puts out on the floor, but you cannot argue that he's got a level of activity that is really unmatched. Taking away his presence with the press, which we all here applaud, he is just extremely active with his constituency and getting out, meeting people. He's always working. This past year, he's had 7 public acts. He's taken on issues such as banning powdered alcohol. He's had some weapons and gun-related bills move through his committee, child custody issues, e-filing in the caucus. The big thing he's working on now is medical marijuana. He has now been working with law enforcement to try and get some kind of package together. Obviously, didn't have the votes in committee this year for it, but he has turned around on that issue and is committed to trying to get some kind of regulatory scheme in place. And so for that reason, I'm going to go ahead and nominate Rick Jones as Senator of the Year. Well, a lot of good nominations, guys. A lot of activity from our senators in the Capitol. But in the end, we are going to give the Senator of the Year Award to Senator Arlen Meekhoff, the majority leader. Senator Meekhoff, I don't know if this roads package gets done in 2015 if it's not for Meekhoff's bulldogginess. And I don't even know if that's a word, but this guy would not quit as far as trying to get this road package done. It was, I think, the decisive point in the negotiations was when he was in that caucus room with the Democrats and Governor Snyder, just got up and walked out when he felt like Democrats were not serious about getting a solution on the roads issue. At that point, he worked with Kevin Cotter, the Speaker of the House, and got together the 600-600 plan and passed a Republican-only package that
cleared both chambers and got signed by the governor, and got the governor the $1.2 billion incentive for roads. Now, you can argue about the details on that and when it's going to come out and whether it's good or not, but the fact is he did something that hasn't been done since 1997 and got a gas tax increase through the Senate. And he put through an $800 million increase in revenue for roads before the final deal came out. He did that by going to individual senators and working a deal out, which I think is fairly impressive. Also, he put through the prevailing wage repeal. That was the first thing out of the chute. He also put out, through his leadership and Senator Joe Hewn, put out the no-fault proposal that's been sitting over in the House. So a couple of decisive moves. And then I think he's also been able to take advantage of this Virgil Smith tragedy, where Virgil Smith has these criminal charges hanging over him. He could have kicked Virgil Smith out of the Senate, and I think that he could have had the votes to do that. But I think in kind of a sly political move, he kept him aboard by just pointing out the fact that the guy hasn't been convicted of anything yet. But the charges are so damning that he could still do something on him, but has turned Virgil Smith into an ally, like he needs any more allies with a 27-member caucus, but has further crippled the Democratic caucus by trimming their numbers from 12 to 11, essentially, and making Virgil Smith a pawn he can use to prevent one of his vulnerables from having to take a bad vote on something. So savvy political maneuvers here by Arlen Meekhoff in the year 2015. Great first year as Senate Majority Leader, and we are going to name him our Senator of the Year. All right, Jacob, let's get your nominee for Freshman of the Year.
All right, we're with Representative Chris Afendoulis.
Chris Afendoulis. Now, he's one of the few freshman chairs of House subcommittees.
Yes, that was one of the reasons. I mean, obviously, it was a big deal that he got chairmanship of the Medicaid subcommittee, which is obviously a big topic within Health and Human Services. I think it's probably the most prevalent topic when we talk about DHHS and most regards. And so that was going for him, and also because he got involved on the work group to get rid of the outdated criminal laws. I know people laugh at maybe the relevancy or anything like that, but the point is he got involved, he got engaged with it, and it resulted in actually quite a few public acts to his name as a result.
Representative Afendoulis also started the year as the chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee of LARA, Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. So that was a budget that he kind of started off on, and then to go jump right into the Medicaid budget, obviously he's got a lot of confidence of the leadership in order to make that significant jump.
Absolutely.
Okay, John, let me get your nominee for Freshman of the Year.
I'm going to nominate Laura Cox this year. She hasn't passed a public act yet, but she's been raising a lot of important issues. She was part of a summit earlier this year in terms of raising attention on best practices in terms of sexual assault on campuses, I believe it was. And then she's also done some raising awareness about domestic abuse as well. I just think she's going to be interesting to watch. I think she's got the potential to be a very effective member of that Republican caucus in the future.
As the chair of the House General Government Appropriations Subcommittee, too, she's someone who has a little bit of pull in the budget and kind of started some discussions this year in that process as far as getting that budget through and raising some issues on revenue sharing.
Yep. Like I said, in the next couple sessions, I think if she sticks around, she'll be real fun to watch.
All right, Lauren, who is your nominee here for Freshman of the Year?
Well, I'm going to go with another senator.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, yeah, you've got to...
Got to represent.
Got to represent, but I'm going to go with Senator Curtis Sertell.
Curtis Sertell is a freshman in every sense of the word. He has not served in the legislature before, and I think, would he be the only one who would qualify in the Senate?
Yes.
As a freshman? Okay, but that's not the reason you're nominating him.
No, from perspective of, being a Democrat in one of the tiniest caucuses that the Democrats have had in the Senate in the past several decades. Senator Hertel has made some inroads. He already has two public acts in his first year. He amended the Register of Deeds Act to accommodate for e-signatures and making it a little easier to give out death certificates and accepting those. And he was also part of the package to remove references to crippled children in state law. And so he has two public acts on his record already, which is pretty good run for one of 11 Dems and someone who's never served in the legislature. He was also the only person to take up the offer to debate Senator Kolbeck on why it was important to raise taxes as part of the Rhodes deal.
He was the only one to answer the bell, and he debated him quite effectively.
He did, and he also is an effective debater on the floor. When something comes up that he disagrees with or feels passionately about, he's always 100% ready, comes forward, states his case eloquently, and sits back down. And he's also willing to work with people on both sides of the aisle, but he is very ready to take a stand.
You take a look at the criteria of our freshmen and all the other awards of the year. One of them is level of activity. And you cannot argue, in particular on that Senate Democratic Caucus, that these folks don't work hard. They're on multiple committees, more committees than I think any other members have been before, just because that caucus is so small. Hertel's finding himself on practically every policy committee.
That's it. He is doing a lot of things at once, and it definitely has to be said that they have to be effective or they have to be active because, they're going to, two or three committees a day sometimes. So,
all right, Craig, who's your nominee now for Freshman of the Year?
I'm going to go with the freshman representative from Midland, Gary Glenn.
Gary Glenn, that may be a popular or unpopular decision based on what side of the political spectrum you're on. He's a bit of a polarizing figure, but tell me why you think that he's deserving of this.
The pick isn't about his politics, but it's about what he's been able to get done and stop from happening in the House so far this year. He's been the voice out there in front of this energy legislation, the voice of opposition to what many of his caucus colleagues want to do. And he's been very successful in lining up people in opposition to it, as can be seen by the fact that it hasn't gotten a vote on the floor yet.
You know what I found very kind of compelling for Gary Glenn is how much time and energy he spent into boning up on the issue. I mean, he really is reading and studying and working hard to understand not only the choice issue, which he's very passionate about, but other things on the legislation that I think is pretty impressive. And anytime you're a vice chair of something as important as the Energy Policy Committee, during this time, it says a lot about you.
I can speak to him boning up on the issue because he's got a stack of papers on his desk about 2 feet high,
right,
of documents about energy policy. But it's not just energy policy. He's been really active on the mega tax credit and civil asset forfeiture. He got legislation going on both of those issues. So he's not just working on energy policy. He could have very easily also kind of followed Corser and Gamrat down this path of being completely meaningless to the process in the legislature as the new Tea Party members. But he chose to take a different path and work with his caucus mates and not be offensive to them in the way that he interacts with them.
You look back to the beginning of the year, I hosted that powwow up in Mount Pleasant. Gary Glenn was with Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat. They're on stage together, kind of as this like Tea Party caucus. But as the year went on, it was very clear that he was kind of separating himself from those two, who were taking more of an isolationist approach and were throwing bombs at the caucus, not making friends with anybody, not building coalitions, and kind of picking up quickly that if you want to be effective in this job, there's a lot more than just standing up for policies and throwing bombs.
Definitely, and he's shown that on the energy legislation that he can be effective at building a coalition.
Okay, I'm going to close out the nominations for Freshman of the Year here by going a little different direction here. I'm going to nominate a Democrat, Sheldon Neely, out of Flint. Now, our Democrat of the Year was Jim Ananick for the work he's done on the Flint water crisis. But Sheldon Neely's had some special circumstances. He's taken over, essentially, the Black Legislative Caucus after Virgil Smith's misfortunes there in Detroit. And I think he's done a very admirable job of leading the Black Caucus and bringing up the issues like the Flint water situation as a first-termer. I think that his work on that and highlighting the problems there in Flint, also sponsoring legislation to try and end high-speed chases in his district, I think just kind of show that he's in touch with his district and is willing to bring issues up to the floor and is not intimidated in any way. I've just been impressed by the work he's done this year, and I would like to throw his name into the mix for Freshman of the Year. In the end here, we've got a great group of nominees here, and I appreciate all the research staff here has done. This is not something that we just whip up one day. There's a lot of work that goes into this. I know Craig and myself and Lauren and John and Jacob think about these things pretty much at the beginning of December. You know, who are we going to nominate? Who would be most fitting to earn these awards? This is something that we take very seriously because we feel like the good work that the folks do here at the Capitol needs to be recognized. You know, there is just a ton of work that I think sometimes go underappreciated in this town. And it's really good to, I think, just to recognize the people who kind of go above and beyond on a certain year and have legislation and do things that we think are pretty special. So with that introduction, we're going to go ahead and name our Freshman of the Year. And this is a little bit unusual. Some people may think this is strange. But Representative Gary Glenn will be our Freshman of the Year, not necessarily for what he did, but what he avoided and what he prevented from happening. First of all, he entered the year, as Craig said, as being part of that cabal with Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat. He avoided that entire mess, separated himself from two people that he could see as being problems with the caucus and not getting anything done, and really kind of distanced himself while not separating himself from his pretty strict conservative values. And, you know, we saw that, you know, time and time again. He was one of the more conservative legislators in the House, but he wasn't disagreeable and he was still a team player at times and kind of learned the game on the fly and was willing to do that. To show how he's learned the game, I think he's been able, maybe more than anyone else, to put the stall on this energy legislation that, you know, at first it was going to get through, you know, by the end of the spring, then it was going to be the end of, you know, maybe in the fall, and then by the end of the year. And shoot, they haven't even had a vote in the House on this thing yet. And again, I think this is Gary Glenn's ability to dive into the issue, bird dog this thing, get support in his own caucus for doing some type of expansion, or at the very least keeping the status quo on electric choice. So I think for his efforts there, he does deserve to be the MERS News Freshman of the Year. Now, a little earlier this month, we were able to talk with Governor Snyder for our annual sit-down with him. There are several issues that we have not broadcast or put in our newsletter yet. We're going to go ahead and air those snippets of that interview right now. I don't know if you saw this or not. There was a recent Moody's report that noted that Michigan is home to 7 of 20 school districts with below investment grade ratings, and that Michigan schools in general have the lowest rating score of any public sector in the United States.
Sounds like a cheerful report.
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad. You've probably seen this. Have you considered any system-wide changes to address this situation?
Well, we talked about more early warning systems in terms of both schools and municipalities over the last year or so, and we made progress on that. The other one is looking at, again, as we go through the Detroit education system and Detroit public schools, we do have work being done in the broader setting of how we can improve municipal finance and school finance in our state.
But is there a need to revisit Proposal A, let's say?
I don't want to start speculation on that this time, but longer term, I think there are good questions that could be asked about how we, you know, do all our funding.
What about this one? Banning abortion after the second trimester through the common D&E dismemberment procedure.
My understanding of that is generally that wouldn't meet constitutional muster. Yeah, that would.
So there's constitutional issues with this one.
Yeah.
All right, so you wouldn't sign that one.
Well, again, there are major constitutional problems.
All right, so if it were to make your desk, then because of the constitutional issues, you'd have to be a veto on that.
Are you trying to get me to say the word veto? I'm avoiding that, so. What I would say is, again, this is not being difficult. It's, you have to wait to see what shows up. So I thought of this the other day because I thought we might end up on this path to some degree. So mm-hmm. I was thinking I've probably signed, I don't know, a couple thousand bills since I've been governor. And with respect to bills, I've actually said what I'm going to do before they arrive on my desk. I think I'm probably in the low, very low single digits of ever giving an indication on how I would sign.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think
No, but we've got a pretty good idea where you're going to go on most things that come to your desk.
Well, I made comments that might give you a direction to head, but I didn't make a comment about using the veto word or signing or not signing. As I mentioned, major constitutional problems, you wanted me to say veto, I declined from having that opportunity.
Following the Paris and your request for pause and sort of review process.
Yeah.
You did take a lot of criticism. Is that hard to deal with?
It's an emotional issue, and unfortunately, I think it's become an overly politicized issue, because I think what I did was good common sense to say, after you have Paris, Lebanon, and Egypt, I think it's a reasonable question just to go ask, to say, shouldn't we, isn't it fair to ask, are we confident we're doing everything possible given these events and what you learned from these events, that we're balancing national security versus being a very open, welcoming place? And I continue to be a huge advocate for being that opening, welcoming place. That's why I've tried to actually elaborate on that through, I mean, I did the Time piece. I did what I thought was a great interview on National Public Radio. That was 20 minutes, a half hour long to clarify, and then appears I wasn't clear enough, and I had to re-clarify this recent week.
Well, that kind of goes to a kind of a follow-up we had on that is, do you think that your comments on this have been taken out of context or misconstrued?
By some, I would think that is true.
For political purposes, or is it just a situation where people hear what they want to hear?
Well, that would be yes.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the challenges in today's world, and I'm speaking not on just refugees, but I think we have a broken political culture in our country, that there's too much fighting and blame, that I believe I'm trying to be a good role model by saying I think the right answer is you need relentless positive action. You need to stop blaming and fighting with people, and you hired me to solve problems, not fight with people. We're a great country today, and I am concerned about the future of our country. How do you remain a great country if your leaders spend all their time fighting and blaming? How do you get the respect and keep the respect of the people you work for, let alone the rest of the world? So I think eventually we need to be more positive, and I want to be a good role model for that.
Obviously, as far as accomplishments here, you would probably rank Rhodes very high. What issue was the most difficult to deal with this year?
Well, the most challenging would be the Flint water situation. To have the lead issue arrive the way it did is not a good situation. And as we learned, it was really happening, I think we responded very well. Again, we're doing the after-action report to learn if there were missed opportunities earlier or there are people within the public sector that could have done more faster. But as soon as I became aware of it, this is when we jumped in with, free water testing, free filters, blood testing, follow-up work, helping switch back the system. One of the things that are clear, will be learnings coming out of it, is one that really amazed me, that I concerned me, was the fact we never had to do any testing for schools for lead and water. There's no federal or state requirement to say it gets checked unless you happen to be a school on a well. If you're a school on your own wells, then you have to test. Mm-hmm. We started doing the testing in these Flint schools. And if you look at some of the results we found, it's really been interesting to see that it's come down to largely fixtures. Mm-hmm. It's not even the plumbing. Clearly the water's okay coming in. The system itself, the water doesn't have any lead. Within the plumbing of most of the school, there's no lead. But it comes down to the fact that there's some old water faucet or drinking fountain that if the water doesn't get flushed through, because if it gets flushed through, it almost goes to nothing. But if it happened to be sitting in that line and you get the wrong water faucet, you can end up with a high lead intake of water.
But talking about the Flint water thing, though, if I could, just getting back to it, did you ever consider firing Dan Wyant over this?
I wouldn't use that terminology. I mean, I obviously went to Dan to ask him to look into things, and Dan's been very effective in a lot of different roles in government over a long career.
Because I've talked to some people in Flint who are disappointed that no heads rolled on this.
Well, again, I think reassignments were made, and I think we're still going through that process of looking at the whole thing. But Dan Wyatt's been a great public servant for a lot of years.
Would you be sympathetic? I mean, we're a couple years away, but at a certain point, Brian Kelly's going to have his own political ambitions. Would you be okay watching him maybe deviate a little bit from the administration, maybe set his own course a little bit as he sets up his political future, whatever it may be down the line? Would you have empathy for that or not?
Well, we're all people, so I don't go around telling Brian what to do. I view it as he's a bright individual that's been a great partner, doing a lot of great things in the state of Michigan, and we're going to continue to have a strong relationship.
So if he were to maybe go his own path a little bit, that is something that you would be sympathetic to, considering what his future political ambitions could be?
Yeah, well, I think you found different points where it's clear. I mean, I would even make it probably clear that most people, if they looked at the political spectrum, they'd probably consider him more conservative than myself.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks for the whole crew here for the work they did in putting together our Best of Awards for MERS. And congratulations again to all the recipients. To all our listeners, thank you so much for listening each and every week or when you can. We certainly appreciate all the listens that we get. And it's because of you all that we continue to do that. So for our entire crew here at MERS, we'd like to wish you all a very happy new year, and we'll see you on the flip side of the ball drop. And until then, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.